You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hi there. Welcome back once again to I Never Thought It Would Happen, brought to you by my good self, Chris Difford, and the wonderful charity Help Musicians. Recently, people have been stopping me saying how much they love the podcast. I never thought it would happen. Now, deep into its fifth series, well, I hope you are going to be excited by my next guest. Joining me in this episode is someone I've admired for a very long time. His work has reached millions via film, soundtracks, and collaborations with acts like U2 and Madonna, and of course Massive Attack. Across the years, he's covered so much musical ground, from orchestral work to Gaelic psalm singing. But it's his solo work that has inspired me the most. I just drift off and go to a much, much better place. So without further ado, I'm really looking forward to talking to the hugely talented Craig Armstrong. Hey, how are you?
I'm not bad, how are you?
Good. Is that your studio, your home studio?
It's not my home studio, it's a wee studio I've had for quite a while, and this is, it's not really a professional studio, it's more like a writing
A writing room.
Sort of space. And this is my son, Jack.
Hey, Jack. He's probably responsible for the magic, is he?
That's right. He's a great engineer.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's good to know.
He was working out in America, but I think he got homesick. So when he came back, he decided to work for his old dad.
Oh, well. Keep it in the family. Well, welcome to this humble podcast for Help Musicians. Are you aware of the charity at all?
I wasn't aware of it, but I've been looking into it, and I think that it's really necessary, and I think it's a great charity, and I'm really happy to be doing this and to be any help at all. It's been a very difficult time for musicians.
Yeah.
With everything that's been happening. I mean, it's difficult enough being a musician anyway, but the last while has been COVID, etc.
Absolutely, yeah. Uh-huh. And it was started by Edward Elgar.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Right.
And the reason he started it was because one of the violinists in the orchestra, when he died, the family couldn't afford to bury him, so they had a whip round, and the whip round became a charity.
That's amazing, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm familiar. One part of my music career, I studied at the Royal Academy in London.
Yeah.
And, of course, Elgar busts.
Are everywhere.
Statues were everywhere. I do like when I was a kid, I was in the school's orchestras, and he wrote a really beautiful piece for children.
Did he?
For orchestra, and it's absolutely gorgeous piece. Actually, it's one of my favourite pieces. I mean, obviously, he's cello piece is the most famous, but that early piece is a great piece.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it Dream Children? It might be that.
That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I looked that up.
I tell you what, when I find it, I'll email you.
That'd be lovely, thank you.
Well, listen, it's a thrill to talk to you because I'm a big fan of your writing.
Oh.
And we're almost contemporaries, aren't we, really?
We are. And I'm a massive fan of yours too. And when your first piano record came out, I bought that, and I've bought every record ever since. And I was astonished when I discovered the serenity of your music and the places that it took me to, of places of calm and still. Is that something that you have in your own being as you're writing?
I don't know if you find this, but, you know, when somebody says to me, you know, I recognise a piece of your music quite easily, you know, like I did a lot of work for Baz Luhrmann, and he was always saying, I just have to hear a few notes. And but I think it's quite hard to kind of look at your own music, isn't it?
Yeah.
And analyse it, you know?
Yeah, it's probably best not to sometimes.
I honestly think it's best not to. I have a friend and colleague who has worked with me for a long time, Emma, and she got me a book for Christmas called How Music Works. And it was all very psychological and scientific. And I just said to Emma, I can't look at that.
No.
I'm interested in it, but I really don't want to know how it works.
No. No, it feels very much to me like the music comes to you. You don't go chasing it. It just arrives.
Yeah. I think that's true. And I think that I've been lucky because I've worked with a lot of interesting... You know, the one thing about doing, you know, my own records and working in film is you meet a lot of other great artists who also have a big influence on you, you know.
Mm.
And you'll know yourself, you don't really work in a vacuum, you know, you're surrounded by other people. But as for the serenity thing, I think it's a sort of aesthetic thing as well, you know. I mean, when I studied music at college a long time ago, you know, I never liked, I mean, I had to study, I mean, you'll laugh at that point, you know, that this was in the late 70s. I think I went to the music college 77 to 81. And at that point, you know, if you wrote a melody, you'd be chucked out college, you know. And it's funny, to this day, I think for anybody who's studied classical music during that time, they feel slightly guilty about just writing a tune, I think.
Mm.
I mean, I learned a lot from it, but that side of it had a lasting effect. But the complexity of things like Stockhausen, although he did write some very beautiful pieces as well, but the overall complexity of the European music thing was something that just didn't really appeal to me.
No.
So I was very happy when the Americans started to take the reins, like people like Steve Reich and Philip Glass, just to sort of take music back to a slightly more emotional place, you know. So
yeah. When you were at college, did you sneak out to see any concerts?
Well, you know, my whole background has been being involved with bands, and I'm a bass player. Are you a bass player?
No. When I started out, I was, but only because it had four strings and I thought it'd be simpler to learn.
Right. So, all through my youth, you know, I was in bands as a bass player. But at the same time, it was my aunt who taught me piano.
Right.
Who, funnily enough, went to the Royal Academy of Music as well. Okay. She was very, very old when she taught me. I mean, she was like late 70s.
Really?
And I was like eight.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it's like for kids with a really old person? It was like an alien or something like that, you know?
Of course.
But so I did the classical music and the love of pop music together. So when I was at the college, I was sneaking out to see lots of bands. And also, of course, the great thing about London is the orchestral concerts are amazing. I do miss that, being in Glasgow. Just that sort of level of musicianship you get in London. But yeah, I did, you know, I was looking last night at one of the podcasts you did with Sting, and I was looking, I looked at Amy McDonald's as well, and but, you know, the Police were so big when I was at college. And
yeah, I can imagine.
Unfortunately, I never got to see them. But I went to see the Talking Heads. And of course, the punk thing was happening. My wife always takes the piss out of me, because when I was learning serial music in London punk, my wife was in a band.
Oh, really? Which one?
She was in a band called His Latest Flame.
Oh, great.
Funnily enough, have just released their old album again and did and right. done some gigs. But yeah, okay. She always takes the piss out of me that I was I was in the hallowed, you know, area of the academy studying Bach, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
And today is, in fact, the beginning of the proms.
Oh, is it? Right.
Today's the first day, and I've never been, and I'm very lucky to be going to see Beethoven's Ninth in about a month's time.
Well, you know, I've always liked the area where things cross over. So, I mean, I've always been interested in film music, jazz, and really obscure electronic music. You know, I like that area of music that isn't so pure. And it's kind of been part of my background. The one big influence in my teens was, like everybody else, you know, the Beatles.
Sure.
And I remember quite clearly my mum and dad had very little money, but somehow, you know, very occasionally we went on holiday. So we went to a caravan park in Scarborough.
And, wicked.
And it was like, you know, mist off the sea. And,
yeah.
And I was a very sickly kid. I had really bad asthma. It was a nightmare. However, I was sitting in the step of the caravan, and on the radio came out the Long and Winding Road.
Ah.
And it was a kind of Damascan moment, because, you know, I'd never heard anything like it, you know. And I sort of made a mental note there in that step that I want to find out how that works. You know the funny thing, when you don't really know much about music, a record sounds like magic, doesn't it?
It can be, yeah.
And in a way, it is magic. But when you hear a big orchestral arrangement at that point, you know, to me it just sounded incredible. So, I mean, that must have stuck in my brain.
Yeah, it must have done.
And later on, when my kids were very young and I had to make some money, I thought, you know, I know what I can do. I can arrange quite easily. So, but quite quickly, I ended up working with quite famous people like U2 and Madonna and Tina Turner. But I think it comes back to that caravan park.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
I think a lot of musicians have moments like that, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Those moments are golden, gifted from above, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a disciplined composer?
Well, I'm not really disciplined at all. But I've had to be recently because, unfortunately, my daughter's been quite ill the last 6 years.
Mm.
So what I've had to do is my normal modus operandi, you know, is working at night, you know, like, I mean, I'm quite happy working like 8 till 3 in the morning, you know, but now I have to work in the morning because my wife and I are carers for her.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a big change because I was a real night owl.
Yeah.
And the last kind of 6 years, I've had to change the way I work.
Yeah. But you're still busy writing film music? Or?
I don't know if this applies to yourself, you can tell me, but I like to change what I do. So yeah. I feel with the film thing, you know, I had a lot of fun doing it, and especially, you know, the work with Oliver Stone and Baz Luhrmann and Peter Mullen was really special, you know.
Mm.
But then I started to do the more solo albums, and I did a classical album called The Edge of the Sea, which was all working with the Sam singers from Lewis. And I really enjoyed doing that. And then I thought, do you know what? I think I'll just write more of my own records.
Yeah.
So, and also earlier on, I was really into electronic music, and I've always been into that. So my next record I'm putting out is a record I recorded in Berlin about 3 months ago for cello and electronics. So,
oh my God,
I actually think it's good, and I think that'll be out in September.
Great. Can't wait.
I don't know. I think Berlin's a real music town, I think.
You
know?
I've never been, but I've heard that, yeah.
It's incredible. And every night, I was saying to Jack, my son, who's hiding from the camera, if I was young like him, I would just go to Berlin.
And work, yeah.
Oh, definitely. I mean, every night, there's like about 40 music things you can go and see. You
know? Really, yeah.
If there's one thing about this interview I'll give you is you must go to Berlin.
Certainly will now. I mean, Squeeze have never been big in Germany for obvious reasons, but
no.
because of our lyrics, I think. But yeah, that would be a great thing to do.
I just sort of feel it's important for artists not just, you know, you've got to move on, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. You've got to keep the spark sparking.
Yeah.
And you definitely do that. I mean, your most recent record, which I got and listened to, it's a collaboration with lots of other people. And how does that work for you?
It's really just being a fan of somebody. I mean, just by a kind of fluke, about maybe 5 years ago, this record company in Germany, Modern Recordings, wanted me to make some records. So that meant I had this connection with Berlin, which has been really exciting. Of course, Berlin, there's a lot of fantastic electronic musicians. So an artist like Alvin Otto, I got to work with a little bit. And like my last record there, I've recorded in Berlin. And it's really just, if I'm a fan of somebody, I either reach out to them or sometimes, you know, they come to me and say they'd like to work with me.
Yeah.
And
was that true of Liz Fraser and Massive Attack? Did they come to you?
Right. Or? The Massive Attack thing, it was really interesting because, well, one, I was a really big fan
of
Massive Attack. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely love Massive Attack. And it was really through Nellie Hooper producing an album I made and hearing the arrangements I did for that album that Nelly took me on as his sort of orchestral arranger.
Yeah.
And one of Nelly's next jobs was doing the Protection album.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, I really loved working with Massive Attack. And then they got I don't know how you'd have to ask them, but they get their own record label.
Yeah.
And they asked, would I sign to their record label? And that's, I had never really considered ever making my own record.
No. You know?
Life is full of chance.
It is, isn't it? And it worked really well, I have to say. That whole connection and having different singers on that record was, well, it was just a spin-off. It was amazing to listen to.
Yeah.
The arrangements and the vocals.
The Liz Fraser thing was really the Bristol
connection,
because I would be going down to Bristol to work with them on their tracks. And, you know, there was Tricky, Goldie, Massive Attack, Portishead, Liz Fraser. But I remember going down and recording it with her. And she's an amazing... She's got something quite deep and spiritual, I think.
Yeah, when with the Cocteau Twins, I could never sometimes understand what she was singing, so I'd make up my own lyrics and sing my own melodies. Not my own melodies, her melodies, but with my own words, because I couldn't understand it. But it was like a spiritual connection listening to her sing.
It's quite weird. I just remember, you know, she's quite a wee person, and all of a sudden this sort of amazing thing came out of her.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, wow. But so the Massive Attack thing and the Nellie Hooper thing within pop music was really important for me.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, I did a lot of theatre work. I did a lot of work for the Tron Theatre in Glasgow. And there's a guy called Michael Boyd. He then went on to work in the Royal Shakespeare Company that got me to do a lot of music for their productions. And the reason I'm mentioning that is that doing the theatre things, you know, I met people like Peter Mullen.
Of course, yeah.
So when he did his first movie, he asked me to do it. And also that doing so much theatre work, you know, when the film thing happened, it was quite natural for me. You know, I was used to being around lots of actors and trying to make music work in the abyss of the emotion.
Have you written a musical? per se?
I've not, but do you know what? I'd love to write a musical. I have, well, you know, lots of limitations, but I mean, I have written some nice songs, but I'm not really a natural lyricist. I mean, if I had to write a song right now, I could just do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or write a cello piece, I could do it this afternoon.
Yeah.
But lyrics, although I really appreciate them, and of course, like with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and Michael Boyd was an amazing guy, unfortunately, he died recently, but I really got to understand Shakespeare and just the power.
Yes, of the language, yeah.
Of a turn of phrase. Mm. But it's not really... I mean, I did write a nice song called Let It Be Love on an album way back, and recently Elton John sang it for me.
Wow.
And I'm going to put that in my new record. But I mean, I have written, and This Love is a good song. But
yeah, come on, that's beautiful.
It's not a... I'd love to talk to someone like yourself that is a real lyricist, you know, not right now, but...
No, in another time. But I'm a huge Sondheim fan. And
amazing,
I've been to see all of his work, and musicals are a passion of mine. When I was at school, I used to buy soundtracks of musicals, and to this day, I still plod along trying to find the right book and the right people to work with, because it's just such a great feeling to be involved in that.
Do you know the thing that I, lyrically that is difficult is... I really admire people that don't write about themselves.
You know
what I mean? I would like say like Bowie or someone like that. I mean, I know he used a lot of cut-ups and stuff like that, but you know that technique of jumping out of yourself?
Yes.
That's amazing. I don't think I've ever done that. You know, I've done that musically all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But lyrically, if I write something, that I don't have the technique to do something like that, you know.
Oh, I'd love to come and sit with you one day and have a go. That'd be amazing.
That'd be great. But I'd love to write a musical. I mean, obviously, in a way, with Moulin Rouge, that was a musical.
Yes, it was, yeah.
It was lots of other people's music, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Hi, I'm Chris Difford, and you're listening to I Never Thought It Would Happen. Coming up next, I'm answering your questions.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And now to some questions for Chris. Hey, this is from Stephen in Bromley. I think Call for Cats shaped the 1980s. There were songs like Luton Airport, for instance, that were hanging about, not to mention loads of TV shows and adverts. You really seemed to capture the zeitgeist as you rolled into the 80s, but did you think that Cats was too odd when you wrote it? No, I didn't think it was odd at all. In fact, it was just rolling off the pen, and I didn't give it too much thought. But I'm glad that when it did come out, it made a load of sense, and it got to number 2. So what was not to like? Great podcast, Chris. What was it that Ray Davies said to you when you met him? Well, you had to be there. Thank you, Jim in Honolulu. So we have somebody in common who, David Enthoven, who was a mentor of mine for many years. He managed Squeeze for a while, but he became a mentor for me. And at his memorial, you played a beautiful piece which brought the house to their tissues. And do you remember that day?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, David Enthoven, I think about him often.
Mm.
I mean, it's you know, he was totally unique.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim as well.
Absolutely.
He's probably one of the only people that could ever get me to play live things, because Dave would go, they want you to play that. And I go, no. And but he'd do it with humour and he'd go, oh, come on. You know,
yeah.
somehow in that meeting, you'd end up agreeing to it, you know.
Of course you would, yeah.
And, but he was really a beautiful person,
yeah.
I think.
He was. It was a very moving day, and I remember him. There was about 50 motorbikes outside the church.
It was amazing.
And they rode off with him at the end of the ceremony, and it was beautiful because he was very passionate about cars and motorbikes.
There was a funny story. I don't know if you're ever in his office, but he had a little separate bit in his office, and he had quite a young staff. And
yes.
You know, he was in his office like about 8 hours a day, and every day I was getting worried about him, you know, like he's just working so hard. And it turned out all he was doing was playing Angry Birds on his computer. And he got to like number 3 in the World League.
I thought
that was so David, you know.
Yeah.
The thing about David, and what's interesting about your charity and this charity, is David... his first concern was looking after musicians.
Yes, it was, yeah.
And in a music business that's quite tough and hard, there's not a lot of people like that, I don't think.
There isn't at all, no.
I think, you know, like when I, you know, I do a wee bit of teaching at the college and things like that, but the hard thing about being a musician is you've got to be sensitive enough to make the music, but hard enough to deal with the business.
Yeah, that's just a difficult mix, really.
It's a very... I mean, life is a fine balance, but being a musician is the same. You can't get too hardened by it, like bad reviews or whatever.
No, no.
Because at the same time, you've got to open up and write the stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a difficult... and it's a vulnerable position, I think.
It is, yeah.
For people, you know.
And I remember being very vulnerable sometimes and going to David and saying, I'd sort of spill out all these words and feelings about how I was getting a bad time. And then there'd be a big pause and he'd just say, Diffy, have a fry up.
Yeah.
Just completely divert your emotions.
Well, the nice thing for me is I still work with Lucy Pullen, who was one of the main...
Oh, Lucy, yeah.
So Lucy and I have worked together. I don't know. I mean, I was with David and Tim for a long time, but since, you know, David died and Tim retired, I'm still working with Lucy.
That's good news. She's a wonderful person.
She's great. Great. And she's got a lot of that IE sort of spirit, you know?
Mm-hmm. She does, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So your music for me has been an extraordinary gift. My fear of flying has been challenging for me over the years. I've had to miss tours and shows and all sorts of things. And now, in most recent years, I get to the end of the runway and I put on your piano music. I press play as the engines rev up. And then by the time I land in New York or LA, I'm 3 albums in.
Oh, that's great.
And it keeps me focused. It's extraordinary focusing compositions. I just wanted to thank you for that.
Well, it's lovely. I mean, one of the nice things for me, because I don't really play live hardly, is, I mean, even yesterday someone sent me a lovely email about how a piece of music had really helped them. And you saying that there is very, especially someone as I admire like yourself, it's lovely to hear that. It kind of makes it worth doing it, doesn't it?
Well, it does, yeah. You know, it's just, it really is a gift. And sometimes when, you know, I'm in a sort of vulnerable place emotionally, it's the first piece of music that I turn to is yours. And it's just
yeah, that's special.
It always brings me back to the middle of the page where I should be.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I was talking to my daughter about my daughter there. You know, she's suffered very bad with her mental health.
Yeah.
And the one thing she's clung on to is music.
That's good.
So when we go for our midnight drives, you know, we trade music. So I'm quite au fait with what the young people, because she's quite young,
yeah,
what the young people listen to.
Where is home for you?
Home for me is Glasgow. But also I spend a bit of time, when I say I've got a studio in Portugal, I've got a laptop and two speakers.
That'll do.
But it's a place I've had for a long time. And I think the combination of Glasgow and being able, I mean, I'm really fond of the Portuguese people and the culture. And actually I've worked with a few fado bands out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I see both places as home. You know, and of course they're so extremely different because it just rains all the time here.
Yeah, of course.
And then of course with Portugal, the problem now is with the climate change.
Yeah.
It's quite dangerous because it's like tinder, you know.
Yeah.
Mm.
I once had a meeting with a lady called Dulce Pontes.
All right.
She's from Portugal. She's sort of Liz Fraser-like in her way that she sings. She's a beautiful singer.
Yeah, yeah. I worked with a band there called Madre Dois, and I can remember her first name was Teresa. I can't remember her second, but that she's a beautiful singer as well. The Portuguese and the Scottish are a wee bit similar. They're a bit dour, I think. You know, I don't know why that is.
I was in Edinburgh the other day, and when I got there, it was blue sky, and I went, this is the first time I've been in Edinburgh with blue sky.
I know.
And then I woke up the next day and it was pissing down with rain.
I know. It's amazing, Scotland, because I guess if it was blue skies all the time, there'd actually be some people that lived here. Because literally, when you leave the city, I mean, it's a funny thing with the movies and stuff, like, you know, people at Baz Luhrmann come here to work with me. I mean, I go to Australia and do a lot of stuff.
Right.
But all the directors I work with come here as well.
Mm.
And they're always amazed, like in Glasgow, in 20 minutes, you're in the middle of Loch Lomond.
It's beautiful.
Do you know what I mean? It's incredible. But I'm sure that's part of it, why it's so quiet, is the climate is so challenging. I think you've got to kind of be born here to be able to handle it, you know. I've got friends I work with who live in Finland, you know, where it's like winter for like 6 months. And they say that, you know, they're just used to it, you know.
But the audiences are extraordinary. Every time Squeeze is a band play, the concert hall, you know, we sell it out 3 nights. It's amazing. It's just everybody sings along. That's Everybody's fantastic. Up for a good time, even if it's a Monday night, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's terrific.
I'm quite jealous of the fact, too, of when I was looking last night at lots of stuff, that it must be really nice to be in a band, you know. I mean, I've worked with lots of bands I get really close to.
Mm.
Like with Massive Attack, you kind of felt, because it was a kind of slight collective, you felt like you're in a band. But then it's amazing that a band like your own band has been together so long. And it must be an amazing... It's like a marriage or something, right?
Well, it is a marriage, and, you know, we fall in and out of love. Our relationship. The thing that keeps us together in many ways is the songs, and the more I sort of travel away from the band, the more I appreciate what we've done. And just recently, we've recorded a whole album of songs we wrote in 1974 when we first met. And they still stand up today. They're being mixed by Bob Clearmountain. And when I listen to them, I get very emotional because I just think the ambition of these young guys writing songs before any baggage, before any touring, was just like the greatest thing.
I remember sometimes, you know, the people still play music from Romeo and Juliet and stuff. And I listen to that and think, God, I was so confident then.
You know?
Where did that confidence come from to think... You know, when you met someone, we'll give you, like, you know, 12 orchestral sessions.
Incredible.
And you just went, that'll be fine, you know.
I'll do it. Yeah. You know, when you were touring with Ultravox at the very beginning, was that a career that you thought would be forever?
Well, what happened there was, it happened at quite a fortuitous point because I'd been in a big, long relationship and it split up. And it was at the point I decided, right, I'll do music now. You know, there's nothing to stop. I don't have to pretend to be a school teacher or anything, you know. And I made an independent single in mid-year, driving through Glasgow, heard it on the radio and wanted to know who did the keyboards.
Good Lord.
And somehow got in contact with me, and I was completely like skint, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hadn't a penny. And he said, meet me in London. And of course, at that point, it was kind of Band-Aid type.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like one of the most famous guys in the world. But I must say, he's one of the nicest guys.
He is, isn't he? Sweet man.
I ever worked with. And also, he's got a really good sense of humour,
yeah,
which is so necessary.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in any of the bands, really. I was just a session keyboard player being paid a lot of money, as it turned out. And but, you know, the nice thing about that was just all the travelling.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I tell you what, I found a thing. My mum died fairly recently, maybe about a year and a half ago, and she was great. My mum, she was a nurse, she was a midwife,
mm-hmm.
and she kept all these books. And one of the books was all the dates we did.
Yeah.
You know, we did America, Poland, Australia. I mean, God knows where we didn't go.
Oh, gosh.
And it was just, you know, that way, it was like two concerts, a day off. But the next concert was like in
miles
Wyoming
away.
Or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
And I just thought, oh my God, hey, yeah. But he was a lovely guy. But at that time, though, as well as working with him, I was a former member of the band Texas.
Right.
And we got a record deal. The nice thing about what's happened musically is that where at one point the orchestral thing was a classical thing and the band thing was a separate thing and the film thing was a separate thing. And I hope I've been a wee bit part of this as an artist. I've kind of brought all that together.
Yes, I can see that. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to think. And obviously with all these different types of music, there's different class issues as well.
Just sure there is, yeah.
Because when I went to the college when I was 17, I couldn't believe there was people that didn't listen to pop music.
No.
It was unbelievable.
I know.
So
I know.
If there's one thing I've done, and I think, say like with the music with Massive Attack, all the orchestral stuff and the Baz stuff, it's got a lot of people listening to orchestras, you know?
Yeah, it really has, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel now when I write a piece, I don't think about what it's going to be, and I don't limit myself either. I don't care if it's embarrassing.
Mm.
You know, if I wanted to write a really simple thing on piano or a really complicated thing, or, you know, I have no shame. I just do it, you know. I don't let anything box me in.
No.
You know what I mean, artistically, you know.
Well, that's wise. I think that's good.
Yeah, yeah. So you might have the Scottish Ensemble asking you to write something, and then, you know, Self-Esteem asked me to do some, you know, I didn't arrange it. You know, I mean, for me, I mean, I know other people have problems with that. I don't.
No,
you know?
And so you shouldn't, that's for sure. Because that's who you are, you know. You've opened the door, as you say, to a lot of people who wouldn't have listened to orchestral music particularly.
Yeah.
Written so beautifully, I have to say, too. So,
oh, thank you.
Just recently, I've been listening a lot to classical music in my car on my journeys on tour, and it still astounds me that there's so much to learn. But the thing that really baffles me is someone like Bach. I mean, he wouldn't have had a tape recorder to record his ideas. He would have just had to write them down and possibly never hear them.
Mm. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know if this will help other musicians that might listen to this. A professor of mine said a very true thing. He said, you know, the great thing about music, Craig, is that you'll never really know anything about it.
I love that.
And you know, that way, as you get older, you look at all your records and you realise,
yeah,
I will never have time to listen to them.
No.
You know, I mean, that kind of thing that eventually hits you that this is so finite. But I think that's the thing with music. I mean, like, if you spend your whole life doing it, you'll just learn a little tiny chink of it, you know?
Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, the problem for a lot of musicians, now that you mentioned the daddy of music, is that when you had someone like that, it kind of, it makes it almost impossible for everybody else to do anything even close to as good as that. That's the problem with Bach.
Yeah. I mean, he's an arsehole, really, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a complete pain in the arse. I mean, there's nobody who's written anything. And I know people say, well, you know, there's romantic music, there's electronic music, but yeah, there's nothing really comes close to it, I don't think.
No.
And that, I mean, that, in a way, it's a shame for us, but there you go.
That's good. Well, Craig, I want to thank you for giving your time up this morning, and it's a real treat to talk to you, and I really hope we get to sit in the same room at some point and maybe write something, or at least have a longer conversation.
I think you should write a musical as well.
I'd love to do that with you. That would be amazing.
And listen, good luck to all the young, budding musicians. You know, we need music more than ever.
We do.
Yeah.
In this fractured world.
Yeah.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. As I'm sure you can tell, I really enjoyed my time in Craig's company. What a thoughtful man. I loved his son peeping in and out of the screen as well. I very much look forward to hearing his Berlin-inspired album. I'll be the first to listen to that. And whatever else he turns his hand to. And by the way, we talked about a guy called David Enthoven, who was my mentor. You may have heard me speak about him before in a previous episode with Robbie Williams. He's a man who was a manager and a really, really good friend. He managed Craig, he managed King Crimson, Roxy Music, ELP, and of course Robbie Williams. A very special friend who we love and miss dearly. If you want to know more about the amazing work that Help Musicians does, then take a look at their website, follow them on social media like I do, and please consider donating a little money to the charity. They do incredible work supporting musicians of all types across the UK, changing people's lives for the better. And don't forget, I'm taking your questions from writing, recording, touring, and everything in between. Send your questions to chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. That's chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Gimme Sugar production for Help Musicians.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.